Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
D-Mace, Vingen and Donick, 102.5. The Game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, Connor Newt here with you. Continuing our conversation about the Titans' joint practice today with the Chicago Bears, Patrick Finley, Bears reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times, will join us at 5 o'clock. We'll get his perspective on practice today. Mitch Light of The Athletic will join us in about 20 minutes as we talk some college football. But today on the practice field, we had two of the past three number one overall picks, Caleb Williams in 2024 and, of course, Cam Ward in 2025. And one thing we've learned in all sports, not just football, not all number one overall picks are created equal. When Caleb Williams was starring at USC, everybody knew he was the top player in his draft year. It was only a matter of time that the Chicago Bears were going to draft Caleb Williams. Although, if I recall correctly, didn't Caleb Williams' dad try to orchestrate some sort of plot?
You found that out after the fact. Remember, in a book that was written.
Yes.
And that created a mess for Caleb Williams.
Yes.
Yeah. It's funny how you don't hear that anymore. But at this time last year, that was a big thing.
Yes, absolutely. Caleb Williams had enormous pre-draft hype. Cam Ward, it's well documented. He was the number one overall player in his class. If you compare him to other potential number one overall players in their respective classes, he probably wouldn't have measured up. But first of all, before we get to this conversation, I do want to play a clip, Connor Newt, if you will. Cam Ward was asked today about what he takes away from Caleb Williams early in his career, what he can take into his second year in the NFL. Here's what Cam Ward said.
Caleb Williams, because there are similarities, obviously, in your game. Do you look at what he was able to do last year as something like, okay, that's something I could pull from in my year, too?
Yeah, we got a chance to watch their film, a couple more teams' film as well. I think the best thing about them that, you know, they were from his year to year two is that they were way more efficient on first and second down. And that's really, you know, if you can keep yourself out of third and longs, that's where you can potentially win the game. And that's why I think that we've grown already, you know, with Dable here as the first year, myself, you know, the whole offense, I think we've become way more efficient, you know, even the OTAs through training camp is being efficient on first and second down. Then anytime we can stay out of third and long, you know, it's hard because in third and five or less, you pretty much know what they can play. They can still do something different. But when you get into, you know, third and six, third and, you know, seven, 10 plus, you know, that's when you got to really key in on your protections. It's going to be deeper dropbacks. They know it's a dropback pass, so you're really playing, you know, at the defense advantage.
So that was Cam Ward on what he saw from Caleb Williams. And again, we'll have Patrick Finley from the Chicago Sun-Times on the program in about an hour. We'll ask him about Caleb Williams' maturation from year one to year two and perhaps what we can learn about Cam Ward as he starts his second year. But Willie, I know at the end of the show yesterday as we were talking about, hey, what are we going to talk about on Thursday? You mentioned wanting to see Caleb Williams because, again, Caleb Williams was a clear number one overall pick. Cam Ward, again, well-documented, not the same as Caleb Williams. What were your impressions just watching Caleb Williams today?
Well, I feel like what I had seen with him on TV played out today. He's actually not as big and imposing as I thought he was. In fact, based on how they're listed, Cam Ward is actually slightly taller, and they're about the same weight, Williams and Ward. But I think one thing that jumps out on the page, off the page on you, is when you see Williams move, he can really run. He is a runner. He can fly if he decides to run. And he's big enough to where he's not easy to tackle either when he gets going. And he ran the ball pretty effectively in both years. He's got a cannon of an arm with questions about his accuracy, right? That's still the thing. He made a really good jump last year in cutting down the amount of times he was sacked. It's well documented. You know how many times he was sacked his rookie year?
68?
68.
Mm-hmm. And last year was 24?
24. So that was a major area of improvement. So his efficiency rating went up a lot in the all-encompassing stat of QBR, right? He went from 43.3 to 58.2. 58.2 is pretty solid, and you feel like there's still room for growth. I do think when you look at Caleb Williams and you watch his physical gifts, then you can immediately say, I can see why that guy was the first pick in the draft. He is a physical freak in a lot of ways with his arm talent, his mobility, all of that stuff. Does that mean he's a great quarterback right now? Not yet, but it's encouraging how much ground he made in his second year, and then we'll see what he does in his third year.
And, Derek, we talked the other day about Cam Ward's strengths. We all came up with our individual lists of what makes a successful quarterback. What are the traits that those quarterbacks largely possess? And Caleb Williams isn't incredibly accurate. I believe his completion percentage last season was lower than Cam Ward's. Mm-hmm. But as we talked about with Ward, if you have other aspects of your game that are elite, you can make up for that inconsistency. Willie mentioned the arm strength. Caleb Williams certainly has that. The second reaction ability, the off-schedule plays, Caleb Williams certainly has that. The rushing ability, the clutch factor. I mean, remember that play he made in the playoff game for the Bears against the Rams? He certainly has that it gene. So although Williams isn't an accurate passer at the moment, he has so many other tools in his kit to make up for it. The questions we have about Cam Ward are, does he have enough tools to make up for his inconsistency? At the moment, no. But I think that's something that separates Williams and Ward as number one overall picks just 1 year apart. We've seen Williams have these elite standout traits that at the moment we haven't seen from Cam Ward.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say, but I think also you're looking at a guy in Caleb Williams. If you just watch him, it looked like he was born to play that position because he was born to have that innate ability to get away from defenders and buy a little time and have speed to get down the field. So he has a trait that not many people have. And then you watch Cam, it seems like he has it at times, but he's not as quick and nimble as Caleb Williams is. Caleb Williams is almost like a bunny around there, hopping and moving. And sometimes that gets him in trouble, you know, because that gets him off platform. And he ends up being, and maybe that's why he's not as accurate, because he moves in a pocket like that and Ben Johnson is trying to settle him down. Cam is settled in a pocket. He knows how to be settled in the pocket. He just doesn't have that thing that Caleb has, that when the pocket breaks down, you know how to get out of it very quickly. And it you don't even think about it. It's just an instinct. And Ward just doesn't have that yet. I'm not sure if he'll ever develop it like Caleb Williams. But I will push back on the – because I thought about it. I will push back on the – you know, clutch gene.
Okay.
For this reason, Cam hasn't been in a setting like that, like Caleb Williams in the playoffs. It shows up more in the playoffs when you're clutch.
Yeah.
Cam did have a clutch drive. He had clutch moments. I forgot the game where he hit Elliott down the field. He made two big plays.
The drive that comes to mind for me, and maybe this is the one you're thinking about, the drive he led to set up the winning score in that crazy Arizona game.
Yes.
After the Cardinals threw
up all
over themselves.
And then he had one at home, too. He had one at home, I believe.
I can't recall.
I thought he
Cam
had
Cam Ward hasn't had much experience in clutch situations.
They haven't been close enough to win.
Exactly. But when he's shown the ability to, if I got to make a throw, I can make that throw. And guys, if you come up with the catch more times than not, then that is what deems me clutch. When I figure it out and I have to win a drive. And in that particular time Cam did it, he had to win it. But people don't see that because it's not a playoff game, or they don't see enough of it. I'm not sure if Caleb Williams is clutch, like if he's consistently a clutch guy. Has he shown it every now and then? Possibly, yes. But this is a team that was bad last year. You got to remember that. So he wasn't showing it enough. Now he got a new coordinator, new head coach. Now he's showing more of those. He's putting himself in a position where the games are meaningful now. And you need that last drive to secure a win or to, get a four-minute drive so you can ice the game pretty much.
I went back and looked at Mike Sando's quarterback tiers on The Athletic. Caleb Williams moved up from tier 3 to tier 2 year over year in this exercise. I'm looking at some of the quotes from the executives and coaches that Sando spoke to. One executive said, quote, "I think Caleb's going from a 2 to a possible 1. A couple of plays he made late in the year and then in the playoffs, not many people can make those plays. You saw it get better and better as they progressed." Then, I'm trying to see who said this. I don't know if this is an executive or a coach. There are games where you are like, oh my God, that's not good. And then there is the Rams game in the playoffs last year where it's Jesus God, he kept them alive. Then he tries to trademark Iceman, and you're thinking, get out of here. So, look, Caleb Williams is far from a finished product.
Right.
But it is interesting to compare and contrast Williams and Ward, because much different conversations about both quarterbacks during their draft years, much different conversation about Williams in these quarterback tiers, and we like these quarterback tiers from Mike Sando. And Titans fans are hoping that Cam Ward can make a similar leap year 1 to year 2 as Williams did last year as he enters year 3. But to me, the biggest difference, again, Willie, is when we went through that exercise earlier this week, listing all of the traits, the escapability, the ability to read defenses, the arm strength, the clutch factor, all of those things. Caleb Williams certainly has his deficiencies, but he has some elite strengths. And it's just really interesting to look at the two quarterbacks, both taken number one overall, much different viewpoints of them.
Right. And I think it's important to keep in mind, too, that when we're talking about quarterbacks, I think of pitchers in baseball. There's different ways to be a great pitcher. There's different ways to be a great quarterback. You don't have to throw 100 miles an hour to be a great pitcher. You can be Greg Maddux or some of these other guys that have elite traits, but not the gross, unbelievable stuff that just blows fans away, strike out 15 guys. Caleb Williams has got that kind of stuff with his physical traits, but he's got to refine some of his weaknesses. But give him a lot of credit. Cutting down the sacks as much as he did was a major jump. And even though his completion percentage went down, his efficiency went way up. His QBR was much better. His DVOA, which is the efficiency grade that Aaron Schatz and his numbers give, he went from well below average, ranked 28th his first year, to 28th his first year, up to 17th this past year. So above average rating. So that was a really nice jump. And it was quite significant. If Ward can make a significant jump like that, I think that's a big victory this year. But what Williams can do, he cut down the sacks, he can run. Let's see if Ward can do that, right? I don't know if he can run. I really hope he can cut down the sacks. But those are two starting points just as examples.
But here's an interesting point on top of that, Derek, in Sando's write-up of Caleb Williams on his quarterback tiers. He says, quote, "Williams took a league-high 68 sacks as a rookie in 2024. That total plummeted to 24 last season, even though Williams held the ball a league-high 3.09 seconds on average before throwing or taking sacks. That was up from 2.84 seconds as a rookie. So he held the ball longer, and significantly cut down on the sacks.
I think that's because he knows how to move in the pocket. He understands the pocket a lot better than what he did as a rookie. So he can possibly hold on to the ball a little bit longer, but yet still dirt it when he has to, or throw it away when he has to, or find that open guy last minute. So those are the things that, you know, separate, you know, Caleb from Cam. Things like that, being able to hold the ball, but yet still be successful, still either not taking a sack, which is most importantly, or getting rid of the ball.
615-737-1025. Again, really interesting. Just two quarterbacks taken number one overall in consecutive years. Caleb Williams, Cam Ward on the field today. Much different stories. I know a lot of Titans fans are hoping that Cam Ward can make a similar jump year one to year two as Caleb Williams. 615-737-1025. We will pick back up this conversation at 5 with Patrick Finley, Chicago Bears reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, Mitch Light of The Athletic will join us. We'll talk more about the wacky and wild world of college football with our friend Mitch coming up next. 615-737-1025. Tomorrow. Big announcement. Tomorrow, come hang out with us at T-Line in West Nashville as we celebrate 102.5 The Game's 15th birthday. And every hour, all day long, we are giving away tons of awesome stuff. Predators tickets, Vanderbilt tickets, concert tickets, and more. I mean, I looked at some of the prizes we're giving away. You know, maybe I'll give you a little teaser. I'm looking at them right now. For example, on our show tomorrow, you can win a pair of tickets to a Vanderbilt men's basketball game of your choice. You can win tickets to the Liberty Mutual Music City kickoff game, Ole Miss versus Louisville at Nissan Stadium. You can win a family four-pack of tickets to a Predators home game. So many awesome prizes. We're giving away so much stuff all day long, starting at 6 a.m. with Robbie and Rex Road. And the grand prize, a Predators season tickets. I believe it's a pair. I don't want to speak out of turn here. But a pair of Predators season tickets. So if you want those tickets, you want prizes, be listening all day, come hang out with us, T-Line in West Nashville, as we celebrate our 15th birthday. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Willie playing some air bass here. Slapping the bass, Willie Donovan.
Okay, who sang this song in a movie?
Eddie Murphy.
Yes.
When he was in jail.
He was in jail.
Yes.
His voice echoing around the hallways. And he had his headphones on.
Uh-huh.
So he was a little off key. Didn't realize it. We've all been there, right?
It's hard to hit those notes.
It is.
Only Sting could do it.
Yeah.
Let's go to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Mitch Light of The Athletic to talk some college football. Hello, Mitch. How are you?
I'm good. And I am never off key because I never, ever, ever attempt to sing. It's probably been like 30 years. But I know my strengths and weaknesses. So you can't screw up if you don't even try. That's my motto.
That is true. The lesson is never try, as Mitch
exactly.
Light tells all of our young listeners out there. So Mitch, Connor Newton and I, we're both professional wrestling fans. And here's something professional wrestling fans like to do. It's called fantasy booking, where we're watching the show, and then we come up with our own theories on how a certain storyline should go. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to fantasy book Lane Kiffin versus the SEC. Tell me what you think is going to happen as this crazy story develops.
Good one. Lane is holding firm, if that's the best way to say it. I think LSU realizes that this isn't a fight for these type of players on the football end. There's the basketball end, too, with that roster, which has four players. But that it's not worth the fight to go against the league. But I don't think Lane thinks about it like that. I'm not creative enough of a wrestling fan. I know what you're getting at, but I think in the end it's going to be a boring resolution, and LSU will stand down. I just don't think there's enough to gain. There's too much to lose by this. I don't think Lane cares about his reputation or about what anyone thinks about him. I think that's been well established over the years. So I'd like to come up with a better, a funnier scenario there. But I think it ends in boring fashion with those players not playing at LSU and LSU standing down.
And here's a question I have, Mitch, because this whole thing makes my head swim. What happens to these players who were being recruited by Lane Kiffin from the NFL to the SEC? I saw within the past hour or so that the ACC has joined with the other Power Four conferences in banning pros from returning. So what happens to DaQuan Wright or Xavier Harris? Do they just have to go to a group of six school? What happens to these kids?
Yeah, in theory, they could do that. But part of the reason they abandoned their NFL pursuits is because they were probably in position to earn more money at LSU or wherever. But they're not, unless there's very, very few group of six schools that have the type of budget. And if they did, they don't have money left over. They've surely spent their money on their roster that they acquired, you know, through recruiting and through the portal in January. So if they just love ball and they want to go play, go play at Memphis, go play at a good group of six school, or they can just about face and pursue their NFL dreams again. So that's like, you know, we've got games coming up. We don't want to spend all the time on legal issues, but you know, it's been thrown out there. Are these Power Four leagues colluding against these guys? Well, you can't force. That's why LSU is a little unique, because they sort of already took a commitment. You can't force schools to sign a player, but then they could say, well, they're colluding and LSU already agreed to sign this player. Now they're not doing it. So a lot of layers to this, but yeah, I just think if they want to play, they can go play at a group of six school.
Besides the Lane Kiffin stuff, Mitch, what do you think is going to be, I would say within the next 2 weeks, because I don't consider the first week, they call it week whatever. I'm not going to even say it.
Zero.
I hate it. Don't say that.
Jump on board. Come
never.
Z words.
It's week one. No. But, okay, say after
that. But
it's
not week one.
But it is week one, but we're not going to argue that, okay? You're not going to rage bait me. But
you guys need to sort out your problems before I come on the air, okay?
What do you think is going to be the biggest headline after 2 weeks of college football?
Well, unfortunately, week one, as it's called next week, is not overly exciting, which is usually not the case. Usually Labor Day weekend's a great weekend. So that kind of, if something notable happens, then it will be a big upset. So, you know, can I sit here and predict? Like, let's say I'm just looking at the schedule. Miami goes out to Stanford and loses. Obviously, that'd be an enormous upset. So I think we're only in position to see, you know, someone kind of stumble badly in their first week. There's a few, you know, Ole Miss and Louisville here in town. That's a good test for both those programs. Louisville with its new transfer quarterback from Ohio State. Ole Miss first season, you know, moving forward without Lane Kiffin. So it's tough to predict what the big storyline is going to be, but unfortunately, week one is not loaded with great games.
Now, now that the season is upon us, what are your expectations for Vanderbilt? Obviously, Berlewicks is going to be the starter first game of the season, but I'm sure he's going to try to, you know, get the young guy in Curtis to play. But what are you expecting?
I think there's a wide range here. My predictions, you know, right now, if I had to predict, I'd probably say 7-5. I think the overall talent on the roster keeps improving. You know, without a doubt, you're losing the best quarterback in, I guess, school history. You know, Bill Wade might argue, you know, in the 50s. But this was the number one offense in the country as far as yards per play, which is probably the most important statistic. But I think the defense is a lot better. I mean, the offense kind of masked some defensive issues last year. They were able to retain most of their key defensive players. The linebacking core is very good. The specialists are very good. Whenever Vanderbilt's been good in football, Willie knows this over the years, they've had a great place kicker. You know, Kerry Spear was around for James Franklin's really good teams and blessed with a great kicker right now in Brock Taylor, which could be a difference maker in some close games there. So, you know, right now, without obviously seeing the team play, I've seen some scrimmages and stuff, but I'd say 7-5 would be my prediction.
Mitch Light is with us from The Athletic. He is the college football editor, one of a great team of writers that covers the sport for The Athletic. And Mitch, I don't know if you had a chance to hear Clark Lee speak publicly for the first time since the decision was made to start Berlewicks, but what jumped out at you about his comments to the media?
Nothing really. That's what I expected. I think people kind of overreacted to the announcement. No way. If you thought that was Clark, whenever it leaked out earlier in the week that this was Vanderbilt saying that Berlewitz is our starter and Jared Curtis, you know, isn't going to play, that was kind of, that was absurd. I mean, they're clearly going to play both, and Clark emphasized that today. And I think they're probably very even in throughout the fall, the preseason camp. You know, obviously Jared Curtis, when you watch him, his arm stands out. He makes a ton of throws, but you cannot discount the fact that Berlewitz has been in the offense for 4 years. You know, doesn't have the same ability as Diego Pavia, but probably understands the offense just as well there. So I think Clark said all the right things, what you would do, you know, didn't give away what their specific plan is. It sounds like they don't have a specific plan. I don't think you can go in and say, unless like, and Austin Peay's a good team. They're a good FCS team, so I'm not saying this is going to happen. But unless you go up and you score in your first three touchdowns and you had a plan to play one quarter, then the next quarter, or one drive versus the next drive, I think, and as Clark said, you got to let the game unfold. You can't just, you know, I think there was a game once when Derek Mason was here, the year they were rotating a bunch of quarterbacks, and I think the starter had played well, whether it was Johnny McCrary, for like the first three drives, and then they took over at like their own 2 yard line and they played the backup. I forgot the kid's name because that was the plan. And like they had a huge turnover. And after the game, they said, well, that was our plan. Well, you got to adjust if things happen, if someone's playing well. So, yeah, I mean, as Clark usually does, he handles things very well publicly.
It sounded to me like he wanted to make it clear publicly that this decision was only for the first game and week to week.
Yes.
It's going to be open, and it really did sound like he was carving out a pathway of, hey, we know Jared Curtis, how the importance of this kid, without saying it in so many words. But the runway is there for him to go take the job at his own pace, though.
Yeah, and I think that's what you would probably like if you're Vanderbilt. I mean, or, you know, would it be great if Blaise Berlewitz had a great senior year and led him to 7-8 wins? Sure, of course. But Jared Curtis is the quarterback of the future, and you want to get him experience. But coaches also want to be sure they put their team in the best position to win, and they feel that starting Blaise Berlewitz is that for at least the Austin Peay game. Now, what you don't want, no coach wants this, no fan base wants this, is rotating quarterbacks. And we, quite frankly, we've seen that in the Clark Lea era, you know, with Ken Seals and Mike Wright, and then, you know, going to A.J. Swan that 1 year. You had the luxury last year, the last 2 years, of Diego Pavia being here, and really, although he's banged up, not missing a start. So I think ideally by week three, NC State comes in, you'd like to have a starter. Not saying there wouldn't be a package for one of the two, but I think you'd like to have a starter for week three and go the pretty much the distance in that game.
Speaking of NC State, they open up this weekend in a interesting game, and where it's two ACC teams, but it's not a conference game. That still baffles my mind a little bit. But what do you think about the matchup at Virginia?
I don't know if you guys saw this on social media today. They had the because you know, the injury reports or the availability reports, because conferences have to do that now. Virginia has like 15 guys on their injury report, a bunch of guys out. So like everyone's like, what's been going on in preseason camp there? So yeah, it's an interesting matchup. I think we talked briefly about NC State last week. Very good at the quarterback position with C.J. Bailey, who is a 3-year starter. Legit NFL prospect. They lost some key skill guys to the portal. They're starting running back and a couple of good wide receivers, but talking to people, and they still feel good about their skill guys. And Virginia is the oldest team in the country. And I think we've done the research. Wow. Other people have done that. Not just like most experienced, but the oldest team in the country. They were kind of like Vanderbilt earlier in the Clark Lea era. They were a developmental program, and I forgot his name, Tony, the coach, former Clemson assistant, was kind of on the hot seat. They shifted. They really hit the portal hard last few years, and they had a great team. They won 11 games last year. I don't think they're as good this year. Their quarterback is a guy SEC fans are sort of familiar with, Bo Prabula, who was at Missouri last year, got hurt in the Vanderbilt game, but Bo Prabula transferred to Virginia, will be the starting quarterback. So, yeah, that's definitely one of the more interesting week zero games, Derek.
Hate it.
That'll be one of the teams I'm sure that Vanderbilt fans will be watching, because that's a big swing game. Yeah. on Vanderbilt's schedule early. You guys had on The Athletic some predictions to kick off the season here. I was a little bit surprised to see what a wide margin Notre Dame was in the question of who will win the national championship amongst your staff, and you guys have a great diverse staff, did that surprise mm-hmm. you that Notre Dame was that much far ahead of the rest of the field?
Yeah, a little bit because, you know, they weren't Ohio State's number one in both polls, I believe. Yeah, Notre Dame was not my pick, so I can't speak to the losers I work with. I'm doing my fine colleagues.
Who was your pick, by the way?
Ohio State. So kind of boring. there's a lot to like about Notre Dame. There really is. The quarterback position, C.J. Carr is very good. Now, they lost two great running backs. They lost two first-round running backs, and that obviously makes a young quarterback's job easier. So they're probably better wide receiver than they've typically been. They're great in the secondary. They got All-Americans throughout the defense there. That did surprise me a little bit.
And for the Heisman Trophy, I think it's always an interesting angle about a wide receiver because the wide receiver has to have the quarterback getting him the ball, the offense to get him the ball. But Jeremiah Smith got the most votes. But size up the Heisman field for us.
Yeah, I mean, Smith, the one thing about Smith, too, is Ohio State's usually so loaded at wide receiver. You know, Carnell Tate was there last year. They got a freshman this year, Chris Henry, who's great. So that's, you know, that's kind of difficult there. Julian's saying the quarterback there is a very polarizing NFL prospect, but he finished, I think in the top five of the Heisman last year as a redshirt freshman. He's going to put up massive numbers there. I think C.J. Carr, you know, Notre Dame quarterback on a top five team is going to be in position. Running backs don't seem to win it much anymore, but Kewon Lacy at Ole Miss is obviously very good. And Trinidad Chambliss, the quarterback, if they have a great offensive year again. And then, I haven't even mentioned Arch Manning, who, if he has a good year. Now, Arch is going to benefit by better skill position guys around him. They went out and got three elite skills. Cam Coleman from Auburn is almost as good as Jeremiah Smith. He just happened to be playing in a bad Auburn offense the last few years. And they got two running backs. Hollywood Smothers from NC State was a 1,000-yard rusher, and Relique Brown from Arizona State was a 1,000-yard rusher. So they've really bolstered their skill players around him. If that offensive line holds up, Arch could have a really big year.
Okay, before we let you go, if people want to check out this prediction group from The Athletic, I think it's really thorough. In every sport, you guys do a really good job of laying this stuff out. But you refer to your staff's prediction, the reader's prediction, and then the, quote, model. Tell people what goes into the model when you're predicting teams.
I don't know what goes into the model.
You mean you didn't orchestrate the model? This isn't the Mitch Light model?
Believe it or not, I can type. That's about it. I can turn on my, I can type. But Austin Mock does a great job of through all sports, but he's kind of like our analytics guy. He's got models, and he does a playoff predictor every year. He's got percent. Literally every team in the country you can go, I think, Vanderbilt's was actually pretty high in his model. I think he's got Vanderbilt 26 or something like that with like a 5-7% chance of making the playoff. But if you Google like Austin Mock, The Athletic, it's a really good resource to have. It's got, conference title odds and all that. And he updates it literally every week throughout the season for playoff odds, national championship odds, and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's always fun to look at.
I found it interesting that the staff, by a pretty wide margin, has Texas winning the SEC. The model significantly has Georgia with the advantage there.
Yeah. Again, I mean, I can't speak to everyone's got a different model and factors and all that stuff. Why?
Derek's
why
model has Michigan State winning the Big
Absolutely.
Ten.
Absolutely. National championship.
What kind of model is that? That is a broken model, I think.
I think Mitch still uses an abacus, so maybe we shouldn't ask him about the model. Mitch Light of The Athletic has been our guest on D-Mace. Vingan and Donicky joins us every Thursday during college football season. As always, Mitch, a pleasure. We'll do it again next week.
Take care, guys.
615-737-1025. I'm going to sneak in a little hockey here coming up next.
Just a little sliver, just a little tease.
Before you know it, the Predators will be back. I mean, the NHL season, I believe, starts 1 month from Saturday, September 29th. But some major NHL news, which we will discuss coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Patrick Finley, Bears reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times, will join us at the top of the hour. We'll get his perspective from today's joint practice. But you know what? Hockey season is right around the corner. The NHL season kicks off, I believe, 1 month from Saturday, September 29th. By the way, congratulations to the entire Predators broadcast crew, Willie Donick, Chris Mason, Hal Gill, Lindsey Raleigh, Kara Hammer, together for the 10th consecutive season as you shift to a new network.
Very excited about that. We've got a new partner in Scripps Sports. So we're partnering with Channel 5, where you're going to see some of the games, some of the programming, and then their sister station, for lack of a better term, Channel 28, which will be called The Spot, is going to have a lot of the games. It's absolutely free. Make sure you know that. If you have an antenna and you have a TV, you can get the channel. No complaining. Hey, it's not on this or on that. And there's other ways to get the games as well. They just unveiled yesterday that there will be an app. Mm-hmm. So wherever you go, if you're at your kid's practice or event and you're hanging out and you want to watch the game, that's going to be available to you in the coming days as we get closer to the season. So we're excited about that, but I'm most excited about our whole crew coming back again. 10 straight years with no personnel changes with the crew that you see on the air. I think that means a lot. We're very close. I don't take that for granted as a unit. So as they say in the movie Hoosiers, Coach Normandale, I got my team on the court.
There we go.
My team's on the floor.
Fantastic.
I love
movie.
That. Yeah.
If my math is right, 5 weeks from today, the Predators regular season opener at Bridgestone Arena.
Oh, wow.
Minnesota Wild. Yep. 5 weeks from today, Thursday, October 1st, the Predators back on the ice. All right. Major news in the NHL today. Connor Hellebuyck, star goaltender for the Winnipeg Jets, confirmed his trade request. He wrote in a statement released by his agent, quote, "Several months ago, I privately requested a trade. I have tried to handle the situation quietly and respectfully while giving the organization time to explore its options. With training camp approaching, I felt it was important to publicly confirm my request." Hellebuyck, by the way, has 5 years remaining on a 7-year contract with an $8.5 million cap hit. He's the best goalie in the world, bar none. He recently won the MVP award. He's won the Vezina Trophy. He was spectacular for Team USA in the Olympics as Team USA won gold. Had a rough year for the Jets overall, but I mean,
he was injured some.
Yes, nobody's going to argue how good Connor Hellebuyck is. And thus continues this recent trend of players, specifically American players in Canadian markets, wanting out. And I don't know what the hell the Jets are going to do. And I feel really bad for Jets fans, Predators fans. I know don't like the Winnipeg Jets, so Predators fans don't feel bad. But this, depending on what happens here, Willie, this will have a seismic effect on the landscape of the NHL, depending on where Hellebuyck goes, if he goes somewhere.
And I think, in particular, it affects the Predators and that division because he is such an equalizer for a team that's been trying to fight to stay at the top end of a very, very deep division in the Central.
I mean, they won the President's Trophy two seasons ago,
and then he got hurt, missed some games, and they had trouble staying afloat because of that. And now he says he wants out. You mentioned it. I think the only holdup is not his cap hit, because $8.5 million in the growing salary cap now is very reasonable for a guy that's as good as him. There are going to be a lot of goalies that are going to make a lot more than 8.5 over the next 5 years. The issue with Hellebuyck is how long can he maintain the greatness? He's 33. So just as a reference point, that's 3 years older than UC Saros. And you hear all the time people concerned about UC Saros and his ability to sustain his top level to the end of that contract. That's always a question when you sign somebody to 8 years. And as a sidebar, as of September 15th, you can't sign a guy to 8 years anymore. So that's something to just keep in mind. That maximum is, I believe, 7 after September 15th. But now the question is, what do you do if you're the Jets? You've got your franchise player saying he wants out. And I'm sure behind the scenes, the reason he went public was he's probably saying, okay, let's move it along, guys. You know, I've
training camps
guys,
around
I'm
the corner.
To play nice here. Yeah, so we're getting closer to the season. Let's move on this. But I'm sure if you're the Jets, you're like, you got to give me some time. You got to give me some options. We don't want to trade you right down the street to our rival. ideally. We need to shop you around. What are our options here? This is a delicate thing. So I don't know how far this is going to go, but I think if you're the Predators, and probably if you're the Jets, you'd like to see him go over to the Eastern Conference.
If I recall correctly, we had Elliot Freeman on, of course, in the lead up to the NHL draft and free agency, and soon we'll have Elliot Freeman back on every Thursday as hockey season approaches. I feel like he reported that there was a deal in place between the Jets and the Buffalo Sabres around the draft, that Hellebuck agreed to go to Buffalo, and it just fell apart. But, Yes. But we also had this conversation with Elliot Freeman as well. This idea of players with no movement clauses in their contracts saying, I want to be traded, and then giving the team a list. We talked about this with Dylan Larkin in Detroit. And I think Elliot told us that there's some talk maybe that teams are going to push for in the next CBA negotiations. If you request a trade, great. We don't have to play by your rules. We can trade you wherever we want, even if you have a negotiated list. But again, there was a lot of talk about this with not so much Larkin because he plays in Detroit, but around Brady Tkachuk being in Ottawa. There were rumblings about Austin Matthews in Toronto. We saw Matthew Tkachuk leave Calgary for Florida. A lot of these American stars and Canadian markets saying, I don't want to be here anymore.
And then you throw in Larkin, who is in a very American market in Detroit.
Close to Canada. Close to Canada.
He's very close to Canada.
You can see it from the hotel.
You can. You can almost swim over to Canada.
Go ahead and try it.
I don't know if you want to swim across that river.
Probably not.
It's a lake.
But
lake, sorry.
And Larkin is running into the same wall. They haven't found the deal that they feel good about it. And so I think that that's completely fine for the team. It's reasonable. If I tell you, Adam, I'll give you a no-trade clause, and then you come back to me and say you want to be traded, my first thing is, wait a minute, you told me you wanted a no-trade clause. So then if you want to be traded, I think your rights and your list of I will only be traded to these four teams, that's not logical, that's not fair, that's not reasonable. So regardless of what's been negotiated, I don't have any qualms with a team saying, I'm not going to help you out unless you help me out a little bit. Let's be fair about this.
What team comes to mind that you think he would?
The usual suspects.
I mean, somebody that...
Vegas.
What would they give in return?
Well,
that's one of the issues,
that's
I think,
the tricky
with
part.
The usual suspects. Vegas would be an example. Florida would be an example.
We mentioned Buffalo, which is not a usual suspect.
Right, but Buffalo would be the exception because Buffalo has a lot of assets that would be attractive to a team like Winnipeg.
And young, you don't see
young
goalies
players.
Traded very much in general, but you don't see goalies of Hellebuck's caliber
being
traded on a regular basis, rarely if ever, for good reason. So it's hard to answer your question. I didn't mean to interrupt, Willie. But to answer your question, there isn't a trade that comes to mind recently.
Right.
Okay, this team got that, so
you can't
the Jets
compare
can get
it
this.
To another one. Yes.
Right.
I think Buffalo would be a great trade partner in that if I'm the Jets, I'm looking at their roster with all of these young players, and you could probably get one of their goalies in return too. You could probably get a pretty good goalie in a package of assets for Hellebuck and the Sabres. That's a crown jewel that they need to get to a next level. They've got their group to ride with for the next few years. So I don't know if it's dead between those two teams, but if I'm the Jets and you're Connor Hellebuck and you're telling me, yeah, I want to go to Florida or I want to go to Edmonton or I want to go to who did we just mention as another logical? Vegas.
Always Vegas.
I look at those teams and I say, well, what are they going to trade me? They've been trading assets for years to stay on top. They've traded a bunch of draft picks. They don't have a lot of prospects. They don't have a lot of attractive things for me to get in return. So I need to shop you around to some other teams.
Quickly. Because I knew this was going to happen.
I'm thinking the same thing.
I knew this was going to happen.
UC?
Yes.
Yes, I was thinking the same thing.
One texter said, would UC in the first or second be enough to get Hellebuck? One texter says, would they trade for UC Saros, unload his contract? Well, first of all, Hellebuck makes more per year than Saros. Hellebuck, obviously the more decorated goaltender than Saros. Hellebuck is also older than Saros by at least three years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not going to armchair GM this thing. I can't imagine that's going to happen. I would have a very, 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 very hard time imagining that happening. But I figured that's what those texts would emerge.
I understand the text because the last 2 years, UC Soros has not been nearly as good as Connor Hellebuyck. If you wound the clock back to the four previous years, I think Soros and Hellebuyck were pretty comparable. You'd probably give a slight edge to Hellebuyck, but Hellebuyck still hasn't had the playoff success, but he does have the gold medal now. But like 2 years ago, that would have been pretty crazy to say. But I get it, and I do think that the price tag times the age is the thing that probably would keep that from happening. I do think we're in a different viewpoint, just preview of coming attractions on the Predator side, where UC Soros is going to be the unmistaken starter to start the year. But I think Eustace Onanen, by the way he was playing in the second half of last season, you're going to hear more about his push to play more and should they play more. And if he is outplaying UC Soros, are they now open to saying, look, we're not just automatically going to put UC Soros in there if he's struggling and Onanen is playing well? I do think that narrative is going to be different than it has been in the last couple years.
615-737-1025. Glad to sneak in some hockey. It's been a while. The NHL season is right around the corner. Starts in about a month. The Predators will be on the ice for training camp in a few weeks. We'll get more hockey sprinkled in there as we get closer to the season. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, Patrick Finley, Bears reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times, will join us. We'll ask him for his perspective on the joint practice today between the Bears and the Titans. We also want to get Finley's thoughts on Caleb Williams, because as we had the conversation earlier about Caleb Williams and Cam Ward, maybe he can help us learn about Williams' maturation and maybe what we can learn about Cam Ward. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.